Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is Cartman against State Farm Mutual. Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the Court, I'm Mark Johnson, counsel for the appellant, State Farm, in this matter. State Farm has appealed an erroneous district court ruling certifying a Rule 23b2 class of policyholders based on a creative request to order State Farm to reinspect 49,000 individual roofs for hail damage. That class certification ruling occurs when, one, liability for any cause of action cannot be established and was not shown to have been able to be established through class-wide evidence, and two, when the ultimate relief sought on behalf of the class was a payment for physical loss to property.
Now, Mr. Johnson, I have to say, this happens to me sometimes, and maybe you can help. I had the impression, reading your brief and then reading the other side brief, of ships passing in the night. One almost wouldn't believe that the same underlying order could have been at issue, because to read your understanding, I'll say, of what the district court did, this is ultimately about whether State Farm is going to pay any more money for these allegedly damaged roofs. To read the other brief is to see that this is functionally an issues class. The only thing it deals with is an interpretation of the contract, and it's about the question whether State Farm can sort of flip coins or throw darts at the wall, or whether it's got to use an objective standard. So it seems to me whether the class certification was correct depends very much on what this district court order says, how much it's trying to do, how much it's not trying to do, and how we're supposed to understand the district court's own refusal to certify the B3 class.
Your Honor, I would agree. That question is full of many issues and, in fact, encapsulates many of the arguments that we've made. Perhaps I can best address it by pointing out some of the failings that we believe that the district court's order did not address, which are key to class certification. The first and foremost is identifying whether a cause of action can be established through class-wide evidence.
Why is that necessary if it's a C4 class?
First of all, Your Honor, and just to be clear, the district court's opinion wasn't exactly clear that he was, in fact, certifying an issue class under C4.
But, sometimes, I was looking at your brief thinking, why don't you take a gift horse? If this is really as limited as the plaintiffs are now saying it is, then it might be actually quite efficient for State Farm as well, because, as I understand it, the issue on the table, I think toward the end of their brief they say it, is really just whether Indiana law imposes the kind of duty to have objective standards. Your position, which you say fleetingly at one point in your brief, this is page 43 of their briefs I'm looking at, your position is no, it doesn't. Their position is yes, it does. Seems like that could get resolved. And if you're right, aren't you done with the whole case?
Presumably, Your Honor, there are a couple of problems with that with respect to issue certification. One, in fact, is from a practical standpoint, we get very little in the way of claim preclusion. The appellees in this case are the only Indiana policyholders that I'm aware of that have ever raised a claim with respect to the manner in which a roof is measured or assessed for hail damage, as opposed to having your claim paid under the policy, which, in fact, is the purpose of insurance.
But don't you think the reason they raised that, I was looking at the testimony of one of the class members, who begins with some adjuster driving up to her house and eyeballing the roof and saying nothing's wrong with it. I mean, surely that's not what people contract for when they pay premiums to State Farm.
First of all, Your Honor, with respect to that testimony, in fact, the district court's opinion copies that virtually verbatim, apparently from the Fourth Amendment complaint, because Ms. Sturger, who in fact was the person who testified in that regard, testified during her deposition that in fact that allegation in the complaint was incorrect. So the court adopted apparently that allegation directly from the Fourth Amendment complaint. But I digress. In fact, Your Honor, people purchase insurance to pay claims. The policy of
don't you think they assume that the company that they're purchasing the insurance from will use an objective standard, won't just say, I'm in the mood to pay claims for everybody whose name begins with K today? Or, I mean, surely there's a contractual understanding between the policyholder and the company.
With respect to the method of evaluating claim, Your Honor, I disagree. The contract is set forth in the policy of insurance between the parties. It, in fact, contains an integration clause that it contains all agreements of the parties.
So you think that under this contract, State Farm could just say, today we're paying the claims of people whose name begins with K?
That would not be consistent with our duty under Indiana law, which is a separate question from our contractual obligation to the policyholder.
But you think that that would be perfectly consistent as a matter of contract law?
It is not inconsistent with the policy of insurance by the manner in which a claim is assessed. There is no obligation in the policy of how a claim is assessed. Practically speaking,
not any reasonableness obligation or anything?
There is an obligation of reasonableness, but that goes towards the duty of good faith, the tort claim, and support of a duty of good faith.
Don't you want the New York Times to be covering this argument? Say State Farm's position is they can be as arbitrary as they want with their policyholders?
No, I don't believe that's our position, Your Honor. In fact, we have an obligation, as I intimated, under Indiana law and virtually any state's laws, is to treat our policyholders in good faith and in fairness. And part of that process is if we evaluate a claim and deny a portion of it, we have to have a reasonable basis in fact for doing so. And part of our reasonable basis in fact in making a claims determination is an evaluation of a roof. But first and foremost, and we focused on, and the plaintiffs have focused entirely, as has the district court, on the breach of an implied contractual obligation by failing to have an objective standard to evaluate roofs for hail damage, that is a false dichotomy. That standard does not exist.
Isn't that precisely the issue that the district court thinks can be decided on a class-wide basis? I fully understand it's State Farm's position that there is no such obligation. It appears to me that it's the plaintiff's position that there is. It's a question of law. It would apply to everybody who has this policy, and anybody in the certified class would be precluded going forward if you win.
A couple of responses to that, Your Honor. First of all, and this reverts back to our discussion with respect to C4, certification under C4, I believe the Castano decision of the Fifth Circuit noted that C4 is a housekeeping rule, is not an additional subdivision under Rule 23B.
Well, I'm not so sure that's true. I mean, only in the sense that C4 picks up on the earlier parts of the rule, which discuss things like, you know, what is going to go forward as a class. So, for example, C1 capital B says in defining the class, an order that certifies the class must define the class and the class claims, issues, or defenses. And then we pick up with C4 on particular issues when appropriate, an action may be brought or maintained as a class action. Just to clarify that every class doesn't have to be every issue. I don't know that it helps us to call it housekeeping or not housekeeping. It's a rule that says you can have issues classes.
Yes, and I think once one of the subdivisions of 23B are satisfied, C4 may come into effect.
Sure. But so in other words, you could have a B2 injunctive class for injunctive relief, just as our MADRIC case was for the geographic scope, just as the med monitoring cases are. They don't resolve the whole case, but they are B2 class actions.
But those in cases that you've pointed out, Your Honor, and that Appellee's pointed out, have a finding of liability for a cause of action at the first stage before proceeding to the second stage. Thus, the equitable relief proceeds after a judgment of some sort, a finding of liability for a cause of action.
In monitoring cases, there may never be any liability because there may never be any damage, and that's one of the things that you're pointing out as well.
I think the medical monitoring cases are based on a couple of different theories, one of which is an independent cause of action for medical monitoring that doesn't necessarily require proof of an injury in fact, but the need or necessity for the cost of future medical monitoring itself.
You have something that doesn't require injury in fact.
I would, if it's a statutory or a common law claim that defines it in such a manner, for example, Title VII does not require necessarily proof of injury in fact. Under this court's decision in Allen, an injunction could issue prior to proof of injury in fact, whereas here the appellees seek issuance of an injunction before proof of injury in fact required for proof of their breach of contract.
Is it your position that this claim could be pursued as a class action? At all?
As filed by the appellees, no. The court properly did not certify a B3 class for damage to roofs, physical damage, physical property to roofs, and the cause of that, whether or not it came within the policy, is clearly involves many individual questions of whether or not there's coverage. And as styled by appellees, I can't envision one. There has been no proposal either by appellees or even as I'm not sure the district court even generally described how a trial could proceed in the district court opinion.
Which is surely why the trial court refused to go forward on that. There was a request, but the trial court said no on the B3 side.
Correct. We do not disagree with that, nor did appellees cross appeal from that issue. Your Honor, before I want to revert back, if I may, to the C question with respect to C-4 and why this can't proceed as a C-4 class action, one more point I haven't yet raised is a question of practicability. That is, even if there are some common issues that can be isolated, and virtually every class action has some common issues, once you keep paring away the individual questions, there almost always will be common issues left, so that C-4 would always apply under the logic that is espoused by appellees.
You still have to satisfy, as you pointed out, all four of the subpart A requirements.
That's correct.
And you'd have, with a B-2, you don't have to show predominance and superiority. You just have to show a common position, effectively.
But that also implies the homogeneity and cohesiveness of the B2 class, which...
Well, what conflicts of interest... they're making an argument, which I'm going to ask them about, by the way, that they have an interest in knowing that there are sound procedures that they keep telling us is a completely independent interest, and I plan on exploring that. But if that's right, then where are the internal conflicts within this class?
I'm not sure there were any. We did not assert any kind of conflicts that would preclude or a finding of 23 or finding that 23A4 was not met.
Why are they not cohesive?
The cohesiveness issue goes to the proof of causation in fact.
But that goes back over to the B3 side, which we're not doing now.
I'm not quite sure, Your Honor, because to prove liability for a cause of action, which they must do to have injunctive relief issued, they simply can't have injunctive relief issued by showing a duty and a breach. They have to show the cause of action, the element.
Wait a minute. I mean, you keep saying that, but... there are lots of cases where parties will seek, for example, a declaratory judgment on the scope of a patent. They'll seek a declaratory judgment. And this reminds me a lot of a declaratory judgment type of request. Sure, are you saying those cases are all wrong?
No, but one has to evaluate the underlying cause of action. That is, what does that cause of action that is being asserted for which injunctive relief is sought, and they do in fact seek a mandatory injunction, what does that proof of liability for that cause of action require? And Indiana law plainly requires proof of injury in fact and proof that the breach is a cause in fact.
You just don't think it's at all possible to have an injunction for part of a case? Or a declaratory judgment saying this is what the contract means, now go forward and do something about it.
With respect to the causes of action asserted here and upon which they base their claim for injunctive relief, that's correct.
Because you just don't think it's a well-founded claim. Aren't you assuming the answer to the question?
No, Your Honor. I believe it's because they haven't shown class-wide proof of liability or that they can prove on a class-wide basis liability for the claim from which an injunctive relief would emanate. It's not a question of whether they win or lose on that, but can and have they presented to the district court some indication they can prove class claims on a class-wide basis sufficient for the court to issue a judgment issuing an injunction ordering State Farm to reinspect again 49,000 roofs. So it's a question of...
Well, it's not that many because some got paid.
Perhaps.
I mean, some got replaced, and the district court has excluded them from the class.
That's correct, but we have no means of identifying those without a claim file by claim file review, as indicated in Mr. Ackerholm's affidavit.
Right, which is the B3 part. But anyway, okay.
Before I depart from the C4 issue, I didn't quite get there, Your Honor, was C4, as this court held in Experian, is not necessarily appropriate for proceeding in a class when, even after resolution of core common issues, the court would still be faced with a prevalence of individual issues that would be required to be resolved before a liability determination could be reached.
If this were to go forward as individual cases, rather than a class action, would there be any room for collateral estoppel?
Well, Your Honor, there is a possibility, I suppose, an offensive use of collateral estoppel, and we've really not examined nor briefed that issue. But let me, from a practical standpoint, address your question is what relief do policyholders have? As part of this event, State Farm, which is a significant hail event, if any policyholder expressed dissatisfaction with the inspection of their roof, State Farm sent a second inspector, usually one much more seasoned and experienced, to walk the roof and to make sure we identified every single possibility for hail damage on that roof. If there was any additional damage found, we paid it. If the policyholder was still dissatisfied, we offered non-binding arbitration on the policyholder, but binding on State Farm, paid for by State Farm, operated by independent ADR systems, and abiding by whomever the policyholder chose as an arbitrator. 1,200 policyholders chose that option. But before they went to arbitration, State Farm also paid for independent licensed professional engineers to evaluate each person who had requested arbitration, to evaluate their roofs, not telling them what State Farm had previously evaluated, how we'd evaluated those claims, and had the professional engineers come back, give us and give the policyholder their report. If they found any additional damage that we were not able to find, we paid it in accordance with the engineer's report. And interestingly, after the servicer providing these engineering reports to policyholders who had requested arbitration, nearly 65% withdrew their request for arbitration after receiving those reports. Your Honor, unless there's any immediate questions, I see that I'm entered my time for rebuttal, so with the court's permission, I'll rest and await my rebuttal.
Very good. Mr. Riley.
May it please the court, William Riley for the appellee class.
So, Mr. Riley, I want you to answer one question for me. Suppose you are the district court judge and you are drafting this injunction that you think is appropriate for the class. What does it say?
The injunction, as I would draft it, would be for an inspection based on a uniform and objective standard after the court received expert testimony as to the industry standard for that.
But why isn't that way too vague? Rule 65 requires an injunction that is sufficiently clear that a violation is punishable by contempt of court. And if you just say general words like a uniform and objective standard, I think this case tells us that that can be very much in the eye of the beholder. I don't even know if it means a procedural standard, such as saying it's got to be certified engineers of some type who do the inspection, or whether it means a substantive standard that, you know, if this many grains have fallen off the shingle, then replacement is necessary. I mean, I'm not a roof person, but I really am troubled at the thought that such a vague injunction could come at the end of this.
Well, Your Honor, I think the district court, first of all, has to be able to conceive of the injunction under the case law. It doesn't necessarily need to articulate in the opinion
right,
exactly
how it would.
Right,
in the case to say that, and I guess maybe it's because I'm not a roof person, but I'm having trouble conceiving what this injunction looks like.
I think the simplest way to look at it, Your Honor, is we're dealing with something, roofs, we all have them. People replace their roofs every 14 years or whatever. So we're not dealing with an extraordinarily complex scientific matter. What we're dealing with is when does the roof lose its watershedding capability? When a roof loses its watershedding capability, then that house is going to be compromised.
Counsel, the only point of doing the inspection is to arrive at a measure of damages. for purposes of retrospective monetary relief. And that's the main problem here. It's an element of the claim for damages for each of these homeowners. It's not an independent remedy for an independent legal wrong, and it's not prospective in nature. It's not as though the court would be saying, you know, go forth, insurance company, and be arbitrary no more on future roof claims. That's an appropriate form of injunctive relief, or it might be anyway. But I see this as a completely phony claim for injunctive relief as an attempt to get in the class action door for purposes of litigating damages claims.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. And the reason I would do that is because under Indiana law, State Farm has implied duty of good faith and fair dealing, which the insureds
can. And why isn't damages, or why aren't damages, an adequate remedy for that violation of the law?
Well, first of all, because of the breach of the contract that we allege State Farm engaged in. Under Indiana law, you know, this is a contract. You have to have a contract, breach, and damages. Injury, in fact, does not appear in Indiana jurisprudence with regard to that language. Indiana black-letter law recognizes that every breach accompanies relief. The relief can be
why
nominal.
Why isn't damages adequate for each of these class members? That's what they really want.
Well, the benefit of the bargain and the contract of insurance that they entered into, the Indiana Supreme Court recognizes that a breach is more than a failure to pay a covered claim. That is our jurisprudence, which the Indiana Supreme Court has articulated in both the Hickman and the Monroe Guarantee case. So we have a breach of the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing in the insurance contract because...
And the remedy for that is damages.
Well, no, the remedy is what they bargained for, Your Honor, is to have an objective evaluation of their claim.
They bargained for insurance benefits.
Well, that, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, is not the jurisprudence that the Indiana Supreme Court set forward in Monroe Guarantee. What the Indiana
Supreme... Well, you talk about this objective standard throughout your brief, but I have no idea what you're talking about. You haven't given any examples of what you're talking about.
Well, I think, Your Honor, I understand your question, and at the certification stage, we did provide that to the district court. But I think the district court looked at this as a matter that there were two.
Do you have any examples? I mean, what does it mean? I don't have any idea what it means.
What it means is when a roof is compromised from hail strikes, there's going to be some loss of the granules on the roof. Our experts said a 30% loss of granules compromises the roofing system. In order for an adjuster to go out and make a decision that has any basis in reality, there has to be something that applies to each policyholder. And what the policyholders here have bargained for is not, as the Indiana Supreme Court said in Monroe Guarantee, just simply the payment of their claim. They have a right to make a claim and then have their claim evaluated.
But here's where I think that we're all maybe having a little trouble. On page 35, I think you get closest to articulating this, on page 35 of your brief, where you say plaintiffs have two claims for relief, a claim for injunctive relief to remedy the failure to have an objective standard, and the claim for damages. And I think I'm imagining one member of the class who, let's say, after your injunction issues, has State Farm come out again, and they've got not the guidelines that they did use here, but some 20-page set of guidelines that's very elaborate about the qualifications of the inspector and what does it mean to have damages that require a new roof or whatever, and whatever descriptions are necessary. And so this hypothetical member of the class has the roof inspected under all of this, and the State Farm people say, we are satisfied that there's nothing wrong with your roof as a result of the 2006 hailstorm. Now, is this hypothetical member of the class going to consider that he or she has gotten, I mean, just the thrill of knowing that there was a good inspection? Is that really what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. They will have the ability, if they're going to sell their house or something, that they have had an inspection and their roof has not been damaged.
The certification that comes after a competent inspection is valuable in and of itself.
I do, Your Honor, because when...
Insurance companies are not in the business of certifying roofs for resale.
No, but
there's
it is
no legal support for this claim.
No, but what happens when you make a claim You want a roof. If you have a hailstorm that comes in and your roof is damaged, you call up your agent sends out an adjuster. You want to know if your roof has been damaged. It may turn out that your roof has not been damaged. State Farm there has abided by its contractual duty, its implied duty of good faith and fair dealing.
Do they send a letter to people when they say, we've decided that there's no damage on your roof?
They do.
So you think that the homeowner could show that letter to somebody?
Does this provide any relief?
What
relief does this injunctive provision provide?
It provides, Your Honor, the benefit of the bargain that they, the insureds, have made a claim. That their claim, they don't know. I wouldn't know if my roof was damaged. I would know that hail struck my roof.
You don't get any relief until you get some damages.
Well, that in Indiana, the breach of any contract accompanies black letter law relief. So you either have the relief of nominal damages under Indiana law, which could be a dollar, or in this case you have injunctive relief where you have the ability to find out through an objective standard whether your roof was damaged instead of just...
It seems to me like this is a very different claim from the one that you were formulating below, because I thought, in a sense, that what you were trying to do through these reinspections was to define the class of people who, A, had some damage, and, B, damage that was not yet covered by State Farm. But you're saying that there's somehow this certificate system that's going to result from the objective evaluations that even for the people who are told you don't have any compensable damage is meaningful relief. But that really seems somewhat far afield from where we began.
Your Honor, the district court did decline to follow our invitation, and I think correctly, in trying to encompass more by having a B3 class also.
This is not a B3 class.
No, I mean by just certifying the B2 class, that the district court declined our invitation, and I think that was appropriate. But what I think the district court recognized was that with a breach, you know, when someone purchases a policy of insurance, they just aren't seeking the payment of a covered claim because, I keep coming back to it, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but the Indiana Supreme Court has made that clear. It's more than the implied duty that an insurance company has. It's more than the payment of a covered claim.
But the question is, what's the remedy for that? And the remedy customarily is damages. And to the extent that a bad faith denial of insurance benefits is a tort, all tort claims require harm or damage. The only remedy that flows from a bad faith claim, if it's proven, is an award of monetary damages.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Your injunctive claim has no legs.
The award of damages is a separate claim. There is a tort claim. Indiana recognizes both a breach of contract and a tort claim.
You need a modicum of legal support for your injunctive claim, and I don't see it in Indiana law.
Well, I think, Your Honor, respectfully, I would disagree. I think that under Hickman and Monroe Guarantee, and also under simply black letter Indiana contract law, as set out in the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles versus Ash Incorporated, that what we would be adopting if we said that an insurance company can simply say that we will pay all claims with K, that they don't have to have a uniform and objective standard for the evaluation of claims, and that the contract essentially is meaningless.
No, it's just that that is not separately actionable. That's folded into the breach theory that you're putting forward here and the bad faith theory that your complaint articulates. It's not a separately actionable legal wrong that carries a different remedy. There isn't any support for that.
I want to come at this from two different angles. One of the things your opponents complain about is that you did not, until your briefs in this court, really talk about issues classes, and that it's really late in the day to do this. You were attempting to present this as an independent claim, not a single issue. So that I'd like your comment on. And I guess number two, if these were all individual cases, putting to one side the economics of it. Roofs can be expensive. Roofs can be $15,000, $20,000, if not more. I assume each one of those cases would raise the question, what does the meaning of this, what's the meaning of the inspection undertaking in this policy?
Starting, Your Honor, with the C4 question, I believe that the district court looked at it that there were two issues that could be determined. Did State Farm have to have a standard under Indiana law, and did they? And the answering of that is would fall under the rubric of C4. Now, the injunctive relief would flow.
Is this enough, though? I mean, doesn't the district court have to tell the parties that it is certifying a C4 class?
I am not aware of any jurisprudence which indicates that the court must specifically say that. I know Judge Lawrence did drop a sentence or two with regard to that in his opinion. I think it can be read in the totality of what he's written that there are issues that he has certified for trial. So I think that...
And because I actually think that's the only way you would get anywhere, because otherwise you fall into the trap that Judge Sykes has identified where, you know, there's... I can see this maybe as a piece of a claim, but I'm really having trouble seeing it as a standalone claim.
If I could maybe address Judge Sykes's question and yours at the same time and quote, Erie, which may possibly be instructive, the Indiana Supreme Court said, thus an insured who believes that an insurance claim has been wrongly denied may have available two distinct legal theories, one in contract and one in tort, each with separate, although often overlapping elements, defenses, and recoveries. So I think Indiana has recognized that there is a breach of contract claim for this implied duty of good faith and fair dealing that comes from the very text of the contract itself. There is an implied duty in the evaluation of claims. And as a matter of fact, Indiana sets forward four standards with regard to that. And
right, Counsel, that doesn't help you at all. All that establishes is that there are, you know, two recognized causes of action that might apply in this circumstance, one for breach of contract and one for the tort of bad faith denial of an insurance claim. It doesn't establish that the injunctive relief that you're seeking and on which your class certification motion hangs is just not an available or cognizable remedy for either of those recognized causes of action.
I guess I would continue to respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because when you purchase an insurance...
Can you cite any legal support for injunctive relief for those claims, either a breach of contract claim in the insurance context or for a bad faith denial of insurance benefits?
Well, I think it flows simply out of Indiana contract law.
No, it really doesn't. You know, there isn't any support for injunctive relief for a breach of contract unless damages are inadequate, and there's been no established, you know, there's nothing in the record to establish that damages for the class members for either of these causes of action would be inadequate.
I think
you're not seeking a classic form of prospective injunctive relief that would, you know, prohibit the insurance company from discriminating or from being arbitrary in the future. You're seeking a remedy for a retrospective wrong. That's just not the appropriate use of the injunctive remedy.
I would disagree again, Your Honor, simply because if there is a contract and State Farm had implied duty to have an objective standard in evaluating a claim, there would be no remedy.
But let me ask you that. Are you asking... I come back to my first question. Are you asking for a declaratory judgment about the meaning of this contract, or are you asking for some kind of specific performance-type injunction saying you must perform, or are you asking for some other kind of injunction? I'm still having trouble figuring out what it is really that you think should come out at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, Your Honor, I think specific performance should come out of this. That State Farm should treat its insureds with what they bargained for, which was an objective evaluation of the claim they made. And as it stands now, if that is denied, then there is no remedy for anyone with regard to the breach of the contract.
Well, aside from, as Judge Sykes is saying, aside from their individual cases saying you have violated my rights under the contract by a bad faith denial of benefits.
Well, I think that
right. The only point of doing a reinspection is to determine individual plaintiff's damages. There is no other point.
I really, Your Honor, believe the point would be that people would have a determination under a uniform and objective standard whether the roof was damaged or not. I mean, I think that is...
Your only reason for claiming that that wasn't the case, I guess, is that they approved some claims and disapproved others, isn't it?
Right.
I still don't know specifically what you're talking about when you're talking about a uniform standard.
Well, the uniform standard would have to be that... after a determination by the court what should be applied, and I believe what will end up being applied is the industry standard with regard to the evaluation of hail claims. This is not, hail has been happening to roofs for a long time. This is not something that is...
But what other uniform standards? I mean, there are fires and policies. We're going to have uniform standards for fires and for earthquakes and for floods and for, you know, all these other things. I mean, I'm having... As I've looked at this case, trouble seeing why should we pick on hail, actually?
Well, I think hail, a fire is, you know, there are collapse cases in insurance and what's determined by a collapse. On fire, I think, can be somewhat axiomatic as far as the damages. But hail, the standard determination is to create a 10-by-10 grid on a roof plane and count the number of hail strikes that occur in the roof, and that provides a determination as to whether the roof needs to be replaced. If the grid system did not find a number of objective hail strikes, then the roof would not need to be replaced.
Ordinarily, that would be an element of your proof of damages, and you're attempting to shift that burden to the insurance company here by way of this creative claim for injunctive relief. You know, ordinarily, you'd have to produce the expert that would say, here's the industry standard, the insurance company breached it and thereby breached the contract and breached its duty of good faith and fair dealing and committed a tort, and my client is entitled to damages. I mean, that's ordinarily how those sorts of claims would be litigated, not as an independent claim to have an inspection performed to see if you did sustain damages.
Why, I think that it all, at the end of the day, devolves down to what is the benefit of the bargain that they entered into with regard to the insurance, and the making of a claim is part of the bargain, and I think that's what we're trying to achieve here. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Riley. Anything further, Mr. Johnson?
Great. I have many things to say, but I'm sure very little time in which to say it. First of all, appellees have admitted to the district court that reinspections serve no purpose other than to identify those entitled to payment for hail damage claims. That's volume 3 of this court's record at page 689. Secondly, there was no evidence submitted to the district court of what this mythical objective standard, the objective standard for measuring hail, might be. Plaintiffs had one expert, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor had never before evaluated a roof for hail damage. He had received no training in hail damage. He was an architectural professor, but he had never been up on a roof to look for hail damage. He agreed you had to look and walk across the entire roof to assess it for hail damage. Here, with respect to the Appalachian roofs, he stood on top of a ladder at the edge. But even Mr. Taylor looked at State Farm's criteria, I should say actually the indicia of hail damage to a roof, and said, I agree with those, that indicia of what a hail damage to a roof looks like. That is a circular, semicircular scar with a slight indentation, oftentimes with a shaded or grayish area, reflecting the impact of the hail. We have two independent professional engineers as experts who testified that State Farm standards do in fact comply with the industry, that there is no holy grail of a litmus test or objective measurement of hail. It takes and it is dependent upon the subjective evaluations and perceptions of the person evaluating it, both their visual and tactile observations of the roof, what it looks like, what it feels like in the shingles, whether there are dents underneath of it. It is a highly subjective method of inquiry. And further, we also submitted a third expert report from a former commissioner of insurance, Mr. Hager, who testified or provided in his report, likewise, that State Farm standards, in fact, comply with the industry standard, that there is no necessarily a objective measurement of hail, and in fact, hail claims are some of the most difficult ones within the insurance industry in which to adjust, simply because they're so dependent upon subjective perceptions.
I have a factual question, counsel. One of the class representatives here, one of the two class representatives, as I understand it, went ahead and had her roof replaced. Is that right?
Ms. Sturger did not, to my knowledge. Ms. Gao, I believe, did, although that is not in the record because we received notice of it after we had filed our class certification brief.
Okay.
Ms. Gao did, in fact, go to arbitration, lost at arbitration, but since it was non-binding on her, she was permitted to assert her individual claim as she has done here.
Okay.
The interesting also that nominal damages and the reference to nominal damages is merely a standard by which when proof of injury in fact is difficult, nominal damage or proof of actual damage is difficult, nominal damages may be used instead. Nominal damages are not a surrogate for proof of injury in fact under written breach of contract law under Indiana law. For these reasons, Your Honor, we respectfully request that the court reverse the district court's class certification order and remand with instructions to deny class certification. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And thanks to both counsel. We will take this case.